Take your Bible and turn to Matthew chapter 25. We're studying the parable of the talents this evening. And we'll begin in verse 14. I want to quickly point out that Matthew cites Jesus saying, "For it." And there's no spacing, there's no distance between the preceding parable. So if you want to know what "for it" refers to, go back to the beginning of the prior parable where it says, "Then the kingdom of heaven." So he returns, Jesus that is, to the subject of the kingdom of heaven that he has just addressed in the parable of the virgins, the 10 virgins. And in that parable, the stress, the emphasis was upon being prepared. Now, in this parable, he is going to stress, again within the kingdom of heaven, the need to be productive. So it's a difference in the nature of the stress. The stress in the first one is on watching for the return of the Lord, and in the second one, it is for working until the return of the Lord. So that's the meaning, the interpretation, and the application, and we're done. Let's pray together. Couldn't be that easy, could it? No, it's not going to be that easy, but it is going to be that simple. That is exactly what we have here. So beginning in verse 14, "For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more." But that's a contrasting word. That word is ha day. It's 2 words, but it is meant to show this is different. You know, in English, we have coordinating connective words: and, but, for, or, nor, yet, so. Those connect phrases. But the Greek language has a little bit more nuance. This is the word "but," used with this "ha," which could be translated "which." It could also be translated "however." But it is a fine line of demarcation, a radical change of direction. We have already been introduced to 2 servants. We're given, one was given 5 talents, which we'll look at in a moment. One was given 2 talents. But they were given these 2 talents and 5 talents based upon their ability. A known commodity to the one who was giving these things. Now, but he who had received the 1 talent, and again, that talent was given based upon ability. Look back in verse 15. To each according to his what? Ability. So this 1 talent given to this individual was not above him, was not beyond his ability or capability. It was given according to his ability. Notice, it was less than the others, but still within his ability. He had received the 1 talent. He went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, "Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more." His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." And he also who had the two talents came forward, saying, "Master, you delivered to me two talents. Here I have made two talents more." His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." He also who had received the one talent came forward, saying, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours." But his master answered him, "You wicked and slothful servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sowed and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him. Give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." We're going to look at this in two phases. One, the parable analyzed and interpreted. The second part, we're going to apply the parable. So let's analyze it first. In verses 14 and 15, a man is about to travel to a far country. He distributes his goods or talents. Now, I've already covered talents once, but let's refresh a little bit. A talent was not a denomination of money. A talent was a weight. It was a measurement by weight. Now, it could have been, and most likely was, a reference to a weight of some precious metal. Gold, silver, copper, all of these things were money. And if it were, and we've talked about all this, if it was a talent, a weight of gold, then it was a significant amount of money. And that's what I want to hone in on. Not one of these people was given a small amount relative to their status in life. These were servants. The Greek word for servant here is the word also translated slave. These were laborers at best. And again, this is a parable. It's not a history. There's no real story that actually took place behind this. It is a made-up story for a purpose. But the elements of the story also have a purpose. So the purpose is to show you that in the master's mind, this was not a great deal of money. But to the steward or the servant, it was a great deal of money. A steward would make approximately 1 denarius per day. That was the rate of money a laborer would make. 1 denarius. 1 talent was equal to 20 years of earning a denarius every day. 1 talent. You understand? It was not a lot to this master. He says so. Jesus does. A little. I've given you a little. Relative to his wealth, perhaps it was a little. I mean, for instance, I'll just ask you a question. How many of you, when you go away, give your money to somebody who works for you and don't tell them what to do with it? All right, so it's a parable, right? Not something you would normally do. So he's going to a far country. He distributes his goods, his talents, and one talent equals about 6,000 denarii. And the number of talents that was given was according to each his own ability. Now, at this point, we've got to make this mental distinction. Will you do this with me? A talent is a thing. It is not a skill. It's a thing. Now, the reason we've got to make this distinction is because the talent, that thing, represents more than just money. It's representative of something. It's representative of something. Just like the master is representative of something, the servant is representative of something, the ability that is described here is representative of something. So keep in mind that a talent is a thing. It is a material thing. It's a weight, likely a weight of precious metal, maybe gold. But it represents something else. And this is where it's going to get sticky and difficult to distinguish. That's why we've got to distinguish it now. One of the things these talents will ultimately represent are talents, skills, characteristics, abilities. Did you hear all that? A talent is a thing here, and it may represent what a talent is, a monetary weight of gold or silver or bronze. Okay? That's a weight. How much does it weigh? Oh, it weighs a talent. How much is an ounce of gold worth? Does anybody know? How many? Do you own any ounces of gold? Any of you? Well, okay. Good. I'm not sure I do. I don't know if I have a full ounce in my mouth. But you understand, gold is not a denomination of money. It's a metal. And its value is based upon its weight and its purity. Right? So this was a talent, a weight of something. Maybe gold. But when we use the word talent, we don't use it like that, do we? We use talent, we think of somebody's innate, inherent ability to do something. He's a talented bookkeeper. She's a talented singer. I started to say he's a talented politician, but that's an oxymoron. Anyway. So make that distinction in your mind so that later on when I use the word talent the way we commonly use it, you'll understand I'm not talking about a weight of gold. Okay? I've confused you already. I can see it. I can see it on your faces. I just have to make that distinction so that when I walk out of here, I can say I did make that distinction, even though I wasn't clear about it the whole time. Okay, so the use made of the talents is described in verses 16 through 18. Two of the servants doubled their talents. One of the servants hid the talent. So the Lord returns after some time, and a reckoning is made, an accounting is made. Verses 19 through 30. He comes back after a long time. The first two servants describe how they doubled their amount. They stand before the Lord. They use a word that implies look. Look. They're unhesitant. Judge it. Examine this. And their Lord was pleased. He He praises them. He says their work was done well. He calls them good and faithful slaves, servants. He rewards them by promoting them. When he says, you were faithful over a few things. Now, I just told you how much that was worth in their economy. I will make you ruler over many things. And he invites them to share in his joy. Enter into the joy of mine. Hey, come on up here. Celebrate my life. Enjoy my life. And then the servant who hid his money faces the same Lord. And he begins by making excuses. He says, I knew you were a hard man, reaping where you've never sown. That means gathering up produce where you never planted anything. I don't even know how you do that. That was a way of saying this guy, everything he touches turns to gold. Another way of saying he falls into a sewer and smells like a rose. I knew you were a hard man because everything turns up good for you. You see what he's doing? He's contrasting himself to the master. He starts out by doing that. I'm not you. I'm nothing like you. And he, for no good reason, says something about the master's character. Do you see that? What kind of a man is this, according to this servant? What does it say? You're a hard man. Now, this is the man who's just given him 6,000 days of pay. I knew you were a hard man. All of that is to lay the groundwork for what he's about to be judged about concerning. I was afraid and I went and hid your talent in the ground. So, in an effort to appease this Lord, because he's evidently just seen the other judgment, the other accounting, he says, look there, you have what is yours. I didn't steal it. You've got it back. And then the response, wicked, and I'm just going to tell you what the word slothful means, and lazy. Wicked, crooked. That's the word. Crooked and lazy servant. He just presents it back to him. He says, look, there's what you gave me. That's it. We would say, not crooked. We might say lazy. But we would probably not say crooked. But this servant has already laid the groundwork to be called crooked. And he laid the groundwork by saying, I knew you were a hard man and you reap where you've never sown. I knew that. Well, if you knew that, why didn't you do something with that you were given? Why do you think you were given that? It wasn't yours. You've given it back now. You knew it wasn't yours. It belonged to someone who made where they never really invested. So, he said, you should have deposited the money with the bankers. You should have invested this at the bank. What happens if you put money in the bank? It gets interest, even in our day, not much. Probably doesn't keep up with inflation anymore, or used to. But you could have just put it in the bank. Then I would have gotten the interest off the money. Now, what happens to money that sits out of investment? Does it stay the same? Does money sitting out of investment stay worth the same amount of money? I want to ask you that question because if you ever took a paycheck, you know the answer to that question. No, it doesn't. What do we do? hopefully, if the economy's decent, what do we do with people's salaries year by year? We increase the salary based upon the rate of inflation. Why? Why do we do that? Because if we don't do that, the same amount of money will actually result in being less money. It won't buy as much as it previously bought. So what happened? This servant sees himself playing it safe. I was scared to death of you. I'm scared to death. The reason I'm scared of you is you're a hard man. I'm not sure that's the best judgment to be making of a man who's about to be judging you for what you've done with his money. But he does it anyway. And by the way, this servant has just witnessed two other servants being richly and extravagantly rewarded. Is this a hard man? Come on up and be like me. Enjoy life like me. That's what he says. Welcome in my world. I'm going to give you more. I'm going to give you a lot. Is this a hard man? What did they do? They doubled his money. How did they do it? Don't know. They had a long time to do it. He was gone a long time. And somewhere in that long time, this guy, this third servant, concludes it's best to just play it safe and do nothing. But as he had judged the master's character, the master immediately judges his character, calling him crooked, wicked, and lazy. And wicked means crooked. The word means crooked. And you can see how he's crooked. He's already twisting things to try to establish the case for having done nothing with this money. That's crooked. He's setting the table for having done nothing with this master's money. But here's the judgment. He takes away what he had and he gives it to the servant that had 10 talents. And here's his explanation. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And then he has the unprofitable servant cast into outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now those are the elements. That's an analysis of the parable from top to bottom. Let's interpret the parable. The main points of the parable are simple. Number one, be faithful in using the opportunities the Lord affords you. Be faithful in using the opportunities the Lord affords you. We don't know what these people did to double their money, but we sure know what the unprofitable servant did, don't we? He buried it. He buried that wealth, that talent, so that no one could get it. But someone was getting it. Inflation was getting it. Day after day after day after day. Inflation was eating away at the prosperity that man had left with his servant. And his servant saw the risk not worth taking. Had he thought through it, he would have understood. I am wasting my master's money by doing nothing with it. So while we don't know what they did to earn the money, they did something. So that's the second point of this parable. Diligence. Doing is rewarded. No. It wasn't noteworthy. It was not something that the Lord Jesus wanted us to hear in giving this parable. He didn't want us to hear what those servants did to double their money. He just wanted us to hear they did something. In contrast to one servant who did nothing. But then there are some subsidiary points that need to be noted in this parable too. Whether we have opportunities or abilities, whatever it is, it doesn't belong to us. Now, I'm using talents now to represent opportunities or wealth. You with me? Whatever we have, it's not ours. Are you with me? I need to know if you're with me. Anything, even, yes, definitely spiritual gifts. I'm going to tell you another thing that's not, that doesn't belong to you. Your children, they don't belong to you. That mind, you're going to give an account for that mind that's in your head and what you're doing with it. The temple, this body, it's not yours. You're going to give an account for that. Let's go ahead and just say, you've got some talents. They may not be easily recognized talents, at least not that other people see, but you. What happened? Oh, my goodness. Okay. Thank you. Whew. Thought maybe Jesus just came. And nobody left. And I was wrong. I was wrong if that happened. I wasn't the only one. But the point is, we are simply stewards of everything we have. And everything we have will be accounted for. There will be a reckoning of all this. And the Lord gives us the opportunity in service, for service, that keeps with our ability to use that opportunity. In the day of judgment, just like in this parable, it will not be the size, the weight, or the number of talents we have that is judged. There was one who had five, and one who had two. They were judged exactly the same. And there was one who had one. And we have no reason to believe he'd have been judged any differently had he done what the other two had done. The question will be, have you or I been faithful with the talents God gave us, understanding He gave them to us to put into use? Now, do you see how hard it is for us not to slip over to the word talents like we use it commonly? Here's a subsidiary point that I think needs to be noted. If the master here represents Jesus, and there's every reason to believe it does, Jesus didn't expect to return soon, did he? If this parable points to the end of time, it tells us something else. It tells us that everything that's happening right now and has happened up to now is headed somewhere. We're going somewhere. We're going to a judgment. We're going to a day of reckoning. How many of you have watched the movie Tombstone? If you love Jesus, you've watched Tombstone. Okay. I love him so much, I can quote most of it. Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp are in the midst of crossfire in Tombstone. And Wyatt Earp jumps up in a hail of bullets and pulls out his long pistol and he just starts shooting and he tears up the opposition. And afterwards, There's a scene after the blood has run and the good guys have won. And one of the good guys says to another, "That's revenge." Doc Holliday says, "It's not revenge, it's a reckoning." You know what that means, folks? It's a balancing of the account. We were all given something, lots of somethings. But the master is going to return. And the balance sheet is going to be adjusted, checked. What have we done with what he gave us? I need to stop because I could go preaching here. I'm just going to say this. If I read this parable correctly, and of course I think I do, but one thing is obvious. Sin is sin. And a sin of omission is as great a sin as a sin of commission. Wicked. Lazy. Could it have been his laziness that was his wickedness? Very easily. All right, let's apply it and I'll close. Let's apply it. Not all of us have the same talents. Some have five, some have two, some have one. But the issue is not how much we have, but whose it is. The Lord gives each according to his ability. That's a hard pill to swallow, isn't it? Man, why are they so talented? I wish I was so talented. I'm jealous. I'm so jealous. You know what I think is funny? I watch these talent shows. Now, again, I'm crossing over. I'm using our contemporary use of the word talent. I watch these talent shows, America's Got Talent, The Voice, American Idol. I sit there in my easy chair, and I have never sung in front of two people. By myself, where people could hear me. And I judge people who millions of people are voting to be the best of the best. Oh, I thought they were a little bit flat there. What do I know about flat? That's just jealousy. I don't have that talent. I need to shut up. That's what I need to do. And while the nature of our talents may differ, that is what God has given us. We may not all have the same things. The fact that they may be different doesn't mean that one is any less or more valuable than any other. Paul made it clear as he described spiritual gifts in Romans chapter 12, verses 3 through 8. He makes it clear. We don't all have the same gifts from God. But every gift God gives us has an inherent value. And it is our treatment of that inherent value that determines our faithfulness to God. Now, I'll tell you this about talents. Some talents are more easy to recognize than others. Okay? When somebody sings in church, that's one of those modern-day talents, one of those contemporary talents. If they're good, we know it, don't we? If they're bad, we also know it, don't we? I'm so glad Brother Sam doesn't put up people who are bad. Have you heard any singers in this church that are just bad? Do you not think there are some bad singers in this church? God bless Brother Sam for carefully navigating the waters and not crushing the souls of people who think they're good but aren't. I can't believe I'm saying this. If you've tried out for a part and didn't get it, I'm sorry. I love you. You've got talent, honey. Somewhere. Find it. Like I said, some talent is easier to find than others. Some gifts from God are easier to recognize than others. Let me tell you one gift that is not always recognized, and it is not always what you would expect it to be. Some people have a spiritual gift of giving and generosity, and they don't have a lot of money. But their giving and their obedience and their faithfulness with what they have blesses a thousandfold over someone who, just because they have wealth, think that they can scatter it around and be useful to God. You can't. That's not your talent. You have money. Perhaps your talent isn't the money. It's the making of the money. It's the acquisition of wealth. It's far more important than the money. We love the money too. But trust me, in eternity, it will be what you do with that money that has value or doesn't. Now, how do you determine what talent, and by talent I'm talking about thing. How do you determine what thing God has given you? How do you determine that? And we've all got, He's given all of us talent. Talent stands for something. The something may be physical, it may be spiritual. It always has a spiritual component if God gave it to us. I'll take for example, someone who has an innate ability to organize. They've always been an organizer, probably all their life, probably from the time they were a child. Their toys might be all over the floor, but they were all in the same direction, all over the floor. They didn't know what they were doing. That just was their nature. Other kids, they lose everything because they can't be organized, and they don't have that ability. So, how do you know what your talent is? I'm going to give you two suggestions, and then we're going to close. One, trial and error. Trial and error. I'm going to tell you something. We have had people sing in front of the church who just aren't that good. We have. And it's not any of our jobs to tell them they are or aren't. God has given some other people the gift of being able to do that. Brother Sam's excellent at it. He's good at it. It's a gift God has given him. And fortunately, or blessedly for us, he's usually able to get that in before they get up there. But every now and then, they slip through the cracks. And thank God, His mercy, even after the embarrassment is over, is such that He still can use us. If you're going to try to find what God has given you to invest in His kingdom, this church is the place to do it. It's the place to do it. Because, folks, we are in the kingdom of heaven. We are not the kingdom of heaven. Do you understand me? We're in it. We're not it. We dwell in it. And so together we can refine each and every one of us in our use of the things God has given us, helping us to even make our investment better. So the church is a good place by trial and error to find your spiritual talent. And I'm talking about more than spiritual gifts. I could be talking about something material. Secondly, use good counsel. Use good counsel. When I was called to preach, I was a 17-year-old boy who had been a renegade, I had been a renegade for years. But God had a way of getting my attention abruptly. And it all came to a head when I discovered that what I had been a renegade about was I didn't want to do what God was calling me to do, which was to serve Him, to be an ambassador for Him. So when I owned up to it, repented, and admitted to God I knew what He was after, I would do it. I didn't even know what that meant. The closest thing I had ever really seen in ministry was a music and youth director. I mean, I had a pastor, but I didn't go anywhere near him. He scared me to death. But I got around my music and youth director. So when I sense God's call to ministry, well, I thought He was calling me to be a musician and a youth director. I couldn't sing. I had no musical training. I had no musical desire. I liked music, but I wasn't good at it. Nobody had to tell me that. But I promise you, my dad would have told me quickly, because I heard him criticize every bad singer we ever had in our church. He'd have told me in a heartbeat. That was his gift. He could tell you your problems. Come to find out, I didn't like youth all that much either. Because, you know, sometimes you have to do it because, well, you're the pastor of a little bitty church, and they expect you to do everything. So you take your little kids to camp, and one of them misbehaves, and you slam him up against the wall, and you threaten him to an inch of his life if he ever does it again, and then you throw him into the bunk and you tell him, and if you get up again tonight, I will rip your ears off your head where everybody in the room hears it. They don't misbehave the rest of the week. When you show the sign-up list for camp next year, nobody signs up. Good counsel, Brother Robert. Maybe you shouldn't bother yourself with being our youth minister. Why don't you just preach? Everybody has some ability to serve the Lord. The question isn't really what is your ability. You'll find it. God will guide you to it. The question is, are you productive with it? Are you using it? A lot of you have said this. I can say this because I'm one of you. I'm one of us. It's time for me to hand it off to the younger folks. That's not your choice. As long as you have a breath to draw, you have a reason to exist. You hear me? And you're to be accountable and will be accountable for that ability God has given you. I don't care how good you started. You can lose a race up to the last step. You hear me? I've done it. Literally. Lost the race at the last step. Looking back. You can lose the eternal race at the last step. I don't think this passage is teaching salvation by works. I don't believe that for a minute. But I do believe he's warning us radically about being productive with what God has given us. And you cannot be productive by doing nothing. Let's pray.